Charles McCarthy.
Perfect. Coming to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up, because we're going live on the Fight Mixer Show.
It's about to get real. Yo, what's going on? We're with the champ, baby. We're with Matthew Wiggy. What's going on, brother?
Hammer time.
What's up, man? How you doing? How you guys doing?
Doing good, brother, man.
I'm sorry?
How are you, brother?
Doing good, man. Just finished up some jiu-jitsu with Charles McCarthy, his gym over here at Boca MMA. So, good, man. Just got some training in. About to go get some Brazilian steakhouse food.
He turns the big 4-0 today, right?
Yeah, he's 40. Old man.
So did he go a little extra hard on you today in training?
Oh, no. He's actually recovering right now from an injury, so he's just enjoying the birthday today. Got him a speaker, nice. That's happy, so he's going to go chill on the beach and listen to some music.
So how's everything going with the gym and everything like that? Because I know your head coach actually came down with COVID. Everything okay with the gym? Everything good with training? Head coach okay? Everything good to go?
My head coach never got COVID. Which gym?
Sorry. American Top Team.
So American Top Team headquarters is not where I train.
I
don't work at American Top Team anymore. I grew up as a kid over at American Top Team. Very long story. Team Alpha Male, I was out there for about 6 years in California. And right now I'm with Roger Crawl, which is ATT Sunrise. So yeah, you can understand the top team, but it's Roger Crawl's gym. And Charles McCarthy's gym in Boca MMA, but I don't represent American Top Team. They're not my people.
Right.
As far as management, my people are at American Top Team, but politics.
I got you, man. And that's what the MMA game consists of is politics. So you also train with Ryan Faber. How was training with him?
Amazing, man. He's a very big mentor of mine. Taught me a whole lot of things. That's my second home. Sacramento is a great gym. I mean, that's probably the best gym in the world for my weight class and for. Just the people are really good people. So I love Team Alpha Male. That's always my second home. I'm going to go back and visit very soon.
Right on, brother.
I mean, between the two gyms that you spend most of your time at now, ATT, the Wolfpack at Sunrise, mm-hmm. and Navone and McCarthy's gym in Boca, you roll with some killers, man. I mean, I've seen some of your lives with Charles Rosa. You're always with Rosa. Yeah. Hector Lombard. I mean, you're getting the better of these guys sometimes, I see.
Yeah, little secret. I'm a good grappler. I've been doing it since I was 7 years old. So my grappling ability is getting pretty high. I just got my black belt finally after 16 years of jiu-jitsu. So it was good to be. It's always fun to be able to expand your game and your knowledge. And I've been very fortunate to learn from, as far as just jiu-jitsu aspect. I mean, I've done judo, jiu-jitsu, and wrestling since I was a little kid. Jiu-jitsu, I've learned from Marcel Ferreira, who invented the De La Hiva sweep. Not De La Hiva, but the half guard sweep. I trained with Charles McCarthy, Uriah Faber, Chris Holdsworth, Wagner Rocha. I mean, there's a lot of people that I can thank for my jiu-jitsu game especially, and then my wrestling game and everything else. But just strictly jiu-jitsu, I've been blessed to be in such a great area as far as South Florida, and then getting to train at Alpha Male for 6 years with Holdsworth and Darren Elkins, Clay Guida, you name them, everybody at Alpha Male. So yeah, I have a lot of people to thank for that, for sure.
And you were like, on your belt. That was last week, right?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate
super
it.
Dope.
Thank
go
you.
Go ahead, David. All right.
Yeah, so, put on a key in a so, while. And that's so it's so awesome to hear that you actually practice, like, you know, judo, jiu-jitsu, wrestling all at the same time since you were a little kid. Because you hear about so many MMA fighters that actually just practice one sport. Like, they have their base, they have their wrestling, or they have their boxing, and they grew up just with that one style. And then they go into an MMA gym and they have to learn different styles. Was that helpful for you, that you learned all these styles at the same time, and you're that hybrid athlete now where you feel comfortable anywhere?
Yeah, I love that when I first started MMA, I was 19 years old, just coming out of college wrestling. And I got a bronze medal in judo in the Junior Olympics in judo. Wow. And I've been doing that since I was seven. But judo was very political as well, because they stopped taking away. I did wrestling for a long time, too. And because I had the double legs and all the wrestling base, which is great for MMA, which obviously is a great thing to do. Judo, they started taking away where you can't touch the legs, and they disqualify you if you go for a double leg. So if you go for a double leg, or if you go to the mat, they even take away the jiu-jitsu and the judo submissions, because they used to let you go and work on the mat. And but now if you go 10 seconds and you don't submit them, they stand you back up, because they want to see Ippon, which is the big throws. They want to see the throws. That's what the sport jiu-jitsu got very political, and they started discriminating against wrestlers and jiu-jitsu guys, because they would come in and start beating them in all the tournaments with just double legs and control, and jiu-jitsu guys would submit them. So they're like, yo, this isn't judo. So they started changing the rules, and I didn't like it. So I transitioned to jiu-jitsu and wrestling, and I took my judo and applied it to my wrestling a lot, but I stopped doing competitive judo. I came back when I was 18, and then got disqualified for taking somebody's back too aggressively. So yeah. I just decided that wasn't in my cards anymore.
You got disqualified for being too good.
Well, I think they don't like American guys beating the guys that are from the home areas either. So it's just like jiu-jitsu tournaments, the same thing. The Brazilian guys, they may, you know, give a little advantage to those guys in a close match, you know. So with judo, they don't explain what the referees are very like stone-faced. They don't show any emotion. And if you ask them a question, they ignore you. So they won't explain why they gave you a penalty. So they go, shido, which means penalty in judo. Shido. And I go, what did I do wrong? And my coach is like, I don't know what you did wrong. And I'm like, hajime, which means go. So that, again, he went for a drop knee throw, and I pulled up to take his back, like in jiu-jitsu, basic jiu-jitsu back take, took his back, shido. I'm like, okay, what did I do? Nope, nothing. Hajime. Did it three times, kicked me out. I'm like, okay. And then the other guy's like, I don't know what you did, but they didn't ever explain it to me. I got kicked out, and that was after I beat one of their other guys too. So I don't know, maybe that was why. But I never really got the full reasoning behind why I got disqualified. That was the JI and JF Nationals in California, I think, when I was like 19. So that was like almost 10 years ago now.
This is a question for you and David. Is there a coincidence that it's broken down to shit-o?
Shido. Yeah, shido. In Japanese, yeah, I mean shit.
Way of the warrior, shido.
Shito.
Shido means penalty. You got disqualified, so yeah, that was that for judo.
So obviously in judo, they rule out like maybe the 2-on-1. They rule out all techniques of wrestling.
Well, they try to take away all of the ground game, basically, which judo originated as Japanese jiu-jitsu is judo, you know. So judo, you would learn a lot of the jiu-jitsu submissions because it is very similar. Japanese jiu-jitsu is very similar to judo. So yeah. Japanese variation is basically a judo variation. So judo actually is the inventor of a lot of these moves. But jiu-jitsu variated it into a different positional, more focused more on the ground game and different, brought in like the guard and the half guard and all that kind of stuff. But judo had a lot of these submissions that they already had already invented before judo, before jiu-jitsu, before Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Right. So with wrestling, did you do Stalactic style, freestyle, Greco-Roman? Like, was it?
So I only did, I did high school and I did college wrestling. So I wrestled in high school at Olympic Heights, which is down the road actually from where I'm at. That was my high school. Coach Mears taught me a whole lot. I started out at Spanish River, wasn't a good high school. Did 2 years at Olympic Heights, and then I transferred to Massachusetts for college. I went and wrestled there for a couple years, and then I began my MMA career after that. So I started over there for a year. I didn't really like living in Massachusetts. It was very cold. And I didn't like how hard the school were. The school was very hard over there. Massachusetts, they don't play around.
So they don't.
Being a college wrestler and learning at a very high level was very difficult to do and to be paying money, even on a scholarship. So then they changed my coach. So after they changed the coach, I was like, nah, I'm not staying here. So I came back to Florida, started my amateur career, went 12-1 as an amateur, was considered the top amateur in the country. But I didn't even know how to strike until I didn't even stand in the proper stance until halfway through my amateur career. Cause I didn't know how to kickbox really. I just have such good grappling that I would just take people down and control them. And we couldn't even do ground and pound in the beginning. So I'd be punching people in their chest and like staring at him and like winning dominant positions. That would be how I would fighting in the beginning stages, the first few fights, until they eventually evolved into ground and pound in amateur in Florida. So it was a transition in that aspect too.
What do you see, Matt, as the next step for you? Because I look at a guy like you and I'm like, man, a PFL, which you fought at last, or a Titan, or a Contender Series, you know, something along those lines kind of makes sense, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a matter of timing and being in the right place at the right time. Right now, Titan, I was trying to get on that Titan card a few fights, so I'm not sure I'm going to be on that. I would love to be on it if something happens, but, you know, we'll see what happens with that. I'm just looking to get another win under my belt. I don't really care who I fight for. I'm currently a free agent, so if any shows are looking for fighters, I will fight at 35 or 45 and beat whoever you want to give me. But, you know, it's a matter of right now I'm in a tough spot. We're all in a tough spot with the corona and all this other stuff that's going on. And I just want to get a fight because I've been injured for a minute. And so now that I'm healthy, I want to fight as soon as possible. I was supposed to fight for SFT here, which is coming up, I think, in a week or two.
Yeah, I'm working that.
Yeah, I was supposed to fight for that, but the promoter, he canceled my fight, then tried to bring it back last second, messed around with me too much. So now I can't make the weight, and I don't want to even fight for a guy who doesn't want me to fight for him. So, you know, there's politics in every fight show, just like everything else. But so hopefully we get something coming up pretty soon here.
I think your situation right now, I mean, you're the number three, number two, number four ranked guy in the Southeast right now.
Yeah, I mean, the rankings –
I know rankings, you know, don't make, but this is arguably the busiest, most active region.
Yeah.
And you're right up there and you are a free agent. That's crazy to me.
Right. I mean, the fight game is nuts. It's not a very glamorous way until you get there. You know, it's a hard road, but I've been doing it for a long time, so I'm hoping that it'll pay off here in the next few years.
And you're definitely around successful fighters, so you're around the right people too.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, everybody, I have a lot of people, very high level people that believe in me and see my talent and my ability. It's just a matter of getting the opportunities and capitalizing on the opportunities as well. So that's fighting is not so much about how good you are sometimes. It's about how stable you are mentally and who gets, you know, the 1 out of 100 times that guy might not beat you, but he'll beat you that one time and then victor. And then that shows up on the record. That guy beats you. Like, no disrespect. I mean, there's people that I fought that I should have had no business losing to because I train with them after. They'll come to the gym, they'll train, and I'll beat the ever-living, you know, shit out of them every day. Like, you know, Benito Lopez, he's a good friend of mine. He fought me in California before he joined Team Alpha Male. I've never been submitted by him once in training, not ever. You know, I beat him up every single day. He got me in a guillotine. So fighting is very weird, you know. If you, I disrespected his guillotine one time and he got it, but would he beat me in any other day? Maybe not, but he beat me that day. So there's a lot of different variables to fighting. It's very different than just a matter of just going out there and winning. The better guy doesn't always win, but you know what? The better guy mentally will win.
So, and this is a big question just hearing you talk and everything. So I think options make things very confusing. Because obviously with judo and wrestling, super talented. So is it, do I go into MMA or do I maybe try out for the Olympics because I'm that good? And then, you know, making a decision from that. And also, who do I fight for? Where do I put, what career path do I take? Is MMA difficult, or because you're talented, you know, you have options, so it makes it even more difficult? Where are you at mentally right now as far as where the trajectory is for your career?
I want to fight MMA. MMA is what I enjoy to do. That's where I feel I'm the most successful. Jiu-jitsu competitions as well, I feel I can beat anybody. I won a combat jiu-jitsu tournament a couple years ago, which is a slap jiu-jitsu where you can smack them in the face and all that kind of stuff. So I'm always open to those. Those are always fun. I'm definitely going to work on – they tell me that I should build my jiu-jitsu credential as far as beating these super fights and stuff like that, getting my name out there. But I'm kind of the guy that doesn't like to talk about myself very much. So it's hard for me to get my name out there. I just have to go out there and actually beat people. But that's also political. You got to get in with the right people and find a way to, like the manager, Seth, what the Fight to Win shows and all those other shows. You got to get connections with those guys and then get on the show. And then that's how those work too. So same variables, just less money for jiu-jitsu for me.
Right.
How can people follow you? How can new fans follow you? I mean, I'm a huge fan of yours. I'm a fan of you as a person and a fighter. I love your mentality. I think you're super humble. How can new fans follow you?
They can follow me on Instagram at Waggy561 or Waggy561. It's WAGY561. Matt Waggy MMA. My Facebook. But that's pretty much it, man. That's all I really go on. I mean, there's Snapchat. I don't really go on Snapchat. Twitter I have. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Waggy, but I'm never on it. So Instagram and Facebook are the ways.
I think it's a testament to who you are. I mean, going back to the people that you're around, you know, I know some of these people, you know, Charles McCarthy, Charles Rosa, Navone, Roger Crawl. These are really good people outside of fighting. So I'm sure, you know, you're all just making each other better men in general. So kudos to you and your mentality. So if you're going off mentality from the outside looking in, you're there, man.
Yeah, I don't like to surround myself with people that are fake in a lot of ways. There's a lot of politics in the fight game. There's a lot of people that aren't looking out for your best interests. And I've learned over my years of going with a lot of people that, you know, you got to pick the people that you surround yourself with just as much as you got to be careful with the training partners. You got to know who really has the best interest for you. And if nobody ever truly knows, that's a life lesson for anybody. You got to know who around you to keep in your circle. But for your MMA game, you need to have people that are going to help you better your career, not that are just going to beat you up and, you know, use you as a piece of meat like at some other gyms that I know.
Let me just correct that thing on the bottom of the screen right there. Matt Waggy is a Titan FC fighter, yes, but he actually was more recently a PFL tournament fighter. Yeah. And they put him against like the toughest guy in the tournament last minute. That's who Matt Waggy is. He's the guy they call when nobody wants to fight somebody.
Yeah. How was it working with Ray Cepho and over at PFL? I actually covered PFL 1. How was it?
PFL was a great show, man. I love those guys very much. I appreciate them giving me that opportunity. Yeah, I was fighting their guy that they were trying to build, of course. But they compensated me well. They treated me like a professional. Ray Cepho was a great president. They had all their entire staff was a great run show. I would say it's up there. I haven't fought for the UFC, but I've been to UFC events, and it's just they treat you just as good, if not better, than the UFC as far as how well they treat the fighters. I stayed in the Mandalay for a week. I fought in the Mandalay. I mean, they took care of everything. They made sure we had everything we needed at all times. So nothing but good things to say about Ray Cepho and PFL.
So is there any other promotion that you would want to fight for? Maybe go to Japan, fight for Ryzen? Maybe, like, is the game plan getting to the UFC? Or because you don't seem like a guy that's greedy about money. You're greedy about respect and greedy about building up your name. So, you know, options are open, like just like I said previously. So is the game plan getting to the UFC? Or are you open, you just want to fight the best fighters in the world?
UFC is always going to be the great avenue for everybody in America. I think UFC is still the game to go to, but ONE FC is doing great things overseas. You know, it all depends on who backs you and who is going to bring you in. I'll fight. I mean, I fought once for Bellator as well. The way they ran that show, at least in my opinion, wasn't great. They didn't care about the show as much, so I don't know. Bellator might be great. Bellator would be great if they support you, and I feel like every show is great if they support you. But PFL treated me and showed me with the most respect of any show that I've. PFL Titan, I mean, all these shows have treated me very well, but PFL treated me the best, and I feel like treated me with the most respect as a fighter. And all of us, the whole entire fight card, everybody was treated very well. The UFC does very well as well. I mean, it all just depends on who you're fighting for, what your scenario is. ONE FC seems like they're a great show. I've never been to one of their shows, but I'm sure that they have a great promotion as well, and I would love to fight for them. Ryzen, never, like I said, no connection, but if there's a fight there, I would love it, absolutely. Any of these fights.
Awesome. So is there any opponent in particular that you wouldn't, like, your target fixated on, or any opponent that you think that would be a good fight for you?
Not necessarily. I mean, everybody likes to have call-outs, but if you call out people that don't want to fight you, it's not worth, you know, embarrassing somebody for no reason. I'm not of that mindset. If they want to fight me and they talk shit, I'll smack them up. That's fine. But if they turn down the fight, I mean, that's on them. I'm not gonna bully anybody into fighting me. So if you don't want to fight me, that's completely fine. But if you want to sign that date to fight me, then I'm going to try to fuck you up.
Now, you just recently cornered your first UFC fight, correct? With Charles' Rose's last fight? What did that do for you as a fighter? What did that give you?
I mean, it was great to experience. I went out for his Japan show as well, but he never got to fight. So I was in the corner for a fight, and I was in Faber's corner. Not his corner, but I was with Faber. So I've been around the UFC events and seen how they treat everything behind the scenes for a few times, and I'm getting more of a feel for it. So it's good to meet all these people. I met Dana at Titan when he came for the – watched me at the Contender Series fight for Titan. So I met Dana. I mean, I know Sean Shelby. I almost fought on the UFC on that card. So that card, I was out there. And I was laying in bed smoking because we were in Vegas. And I was just chilling. And Charles was at the weigh-ins. They only could take one person to the weigh-ins with Charles because of the coronavirus thing. So they were keeping it very secluded. So I was in the hotel. And then McCarthy and Charles, they text me, 50-50 chance you might be fighting tomorrow. I'm like, interesting. I'd be fighting at 155 against Tyson Griffin. At 155, it would have been on that same fight card as Charles, because I guess one of the guys fell out like right that minute at the weigh-ins, but they didn't have enough time to make it happen. But they were gonna have me come in last second. That would have been a really cool story.
So you're right there. You're right on the radar, man.
That's how fights happen here, man. It's not always it's being at the right place at the right time. It's having the right managers. It's having the right connections. Being lucky a lot of times too. You know, you have to have the credentials, of course, but there's a lot of very good credentials that will never get in the UFC, you know? So it's one of those
So I got one question for you. So one more question from me. Who was the fighter that you saw and you said, okay, this is the sport I can do. I can definitely excel at this.
This is the what?
Who is the one fighter that you actually watched and you said, wow, this is my hero. This is a sport I can excel at. Who was the one guy?
When I started doing MMA, I mean, MMA was something I always wanted to do because I was in jiu-jitsu from a kid, and I saw – so basically when I started jiu-jitsu, American Top Team wasn't even founded yet. It was at Boca Black Belt Academy, which is a very small gym in Boca on Federal – I think it's near the beach over in Boca. And it's a very small place where the Silveria brothers, Laborio, and everybody – all the people that Laborio brought over to before he had the first headquarters at American Top Team. So this was 2003 or 4, 2002 maybe, 2003, I think. So 2003, I was a kid at this gym, and all of those guys were there. It was no American Top Team yet, and I followed my original jiu-jitsu coach, Marcel Ferreira, to his gym in Deerfield. So those are the people that I was around at that time, and then I saw them all fighting. So I always was around the fight, like my coach, Marcel. He fought in the AFC, which was a big show back here back then, the Absolute Fighting Championships. And McCarthy fought, actually, as well on that show. And Tiago Pitbull Alves was a big inspiration for me. Hector Lombard was a big inspiration for me. I watched him a lot. But my favorite fighter to watch was Dan Henderson, to watch personally. I like Dan Henderson a lot.
Awesome. And what's your favorite position?
You could be Den Henderson's son.
I don't think so. Henderson is very cool, though. I met him actually at my Bellator fight. He was there. So that was really cool to meet Den Henderson.
I retract that statement.
Wait, what?
I take it back.
I'm not his son anymore?
No, I take the statement back. I don't know him, though. But I'll take your word for it that he's not that cool.
I mean, no, he was very cool. Very cool to me. Very cool. I think he's one of my idols as an MMA fighter, as a pioneer for the sport. I thought he beat Michael Bisping and deserved to be the UFC champion that last fight of his, but it didn't work out for him.
It happens. So before we let you go, Brian Morley asks, because his favorite submission is the guillotine, what's your favorite submission?
I have a very, very nice guillotine that I've adapted from Uriah Faber that I can – I do a lot of chokes with grabbing the chin, and all of my chokes come stemming off of that and keeping a tight elbows and doing the Uriah Faber guillotine where you catch him here and you want to keep everything tight and put his head here and try to choke him together. And then there's a variation to a neck crank off of that I do to pretty much everybody. Cyborg actually hit it. Do you know who Cyborg Santos is, the jiu-jitsu guy? One of his last tournaments, he hit this move that I do a lot, and he posted it. If you guys could check out Cyborg's page, he does a lot of those variations as well, and he loves that kind of move. And it's a move that I developed, like I said, from Uriah Faber's guillotine, because he has like a series of guillotines that he shows, and it's about 15 moves. Every move has a series from Uriah Faber and from Charles McCarthy, and all these moves, they all flow together.
but I like the guillotine and I like leg locks. I like the moves that work, but my go-to is the guillotine as well, but a guillotine variation.
Cool.
I think that's from the Team Alpha Male team is the guillotine. That's like, that's the team's move.
That's Faber's move. I mean, it's trademarked for sure. So it's a fun move to hit, and I like getting that. It's a wrestling position, so it's a comfortable position. You know how to manipulate the body.
Awesome. So we're gonna wrap it up. We're gonna let you go eat your dinner. But anything you want to shout out? Anybody you want to shout out? Anybody? Let us know where we can find you, man.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys for having me. Thank you for having me on the show. I want to thank all my coaches that have helped me. All my sponsors that have helped me throughout the years. You can follow me on Instagram at Wagy561, Facebook at Matt Wagy MMA, or at my regular Facebook page, Matthew Wagy, Twitter, Matt Wagy. So wherever you want to follow me, please.
Awesome, brother. Hey, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We're cheering for you, Matt.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate
you're the man, brother. Have a good one.
You guys, have a good day or night.
Fuck yeah, brother. Fuck yeah.
So.
What's up, gentlemen?
Is that a Moscow?
Drink. I was late, so I had to grab a drink.
Is that a Moscow?
It actually is. My wife just made it for me.
I made that infomercial.
It's a Moscow mule in a Moscow mule cup. Yeah.
Look at this Russian agent with a Russian drink.
Are you sure that's not apple juice?
Yeah, okay, Rudiger, it sounds so Russian.
Yeah, like what? Sounds more like a Russian.
I do appreciate a cup of apple juice, but this is actually a Moscow mule. It's delicious. My wife just brought it to me.
I'm allergic.
That's I'm a good one. Corona Extra, the official sponsor. Corona. Just kidding.
This is a message for Gabe. Everybody else, close your eyes.
What's it say?
Oh, you're my favorite. You were supposed to close your eyes. Whatever. and then the producer with the lame ass water.
Yeah. I'm drinking water.
Come on, man.
I better go get some scotch.
Yeah, if you're gonna do it right, man. Go all the way in. So, guys,
says.
That's super happy about the Contender Series, and that's the show that I'm encouraging Gabriel Rudiger, the champ, to watch the most.
How come?
He doesn't watch those.
Because the Contender Series, to me,
what is
equivalent to, like, college national championship games.
How's that?
Because it's the biggest moment of these kids' life.
Is this the Dana White Contender Series you're
talking about? Yeah. So it's such a – the stakes are so high that the fights are amazing, bro.
If it's how I'll watch it, I've actually had a few friends that have done it with some success after the fact. Look, it's always great to see the new breed that are getting prepared and coming up. I'll do my very best, but don't hold your breath.
So
I have enough problems without holding my breath.
So what is the last UFC event?
I'll tell you this.
What?
I watched Benavidez versus the other little guy.
Figueredo.
It was adorable. It was so cute. Yeah, that guy had the look of like he wanted to kill him. I was so
bro. There's nothing. Like, cute it was so Figueredo, bro. Nothing cute about that guy. That guy's terrifying.
And cute at the same time.
Nah, nothing cute about him, dude. Every time
let me tell you. He came with bad intentions, and I really enjoyed it. He murked Benavidez. It was not even a fight.
Totally agree. And he's making that division exciting again.
And I'll tell you this. So when I fought for the PFC title, Benavidez was the commentator. And before, I obviously couldn't hear the commentating until I watched it afterwards. But he was saying my opponent beat him for the state of New Mexico wrestling. So he knew he would beat me. He's like, this guy's going to beat Gabe no problem. And just for that, I enjoyed watching the Brazilian smash his face.
Why would anyone talk shit to you, Gabe? Why? You're a black belt. You kill people. Well, bad idea.
No. He was commentating. He was like, this guy's going to beat Gabe guaranteed. I didn't know about it until I heard, obviously I'm fighting. I don't hear commentating. But after the bet, it actually gave me a little more satisfaction watching the other. And the guy was a gangster, man. He came out and put in work.
That's the one thing I hate about commentators and like listening to them, because some commentators, like ESPN, like analysts, like who's that one prick from ESPN that shut off his mouth and then he like put up a boxing video. What's his name?
Stephen A. Smith.
Stephen A. fucking Smith. That guy needs to rot in Satan's asshole. That guy is Satan in my eyes. He needs to get fired. Eliminated.
Look at David's eyes when he's talking about him.
I Stephen A. Smith is the worst thing to happen to MMA. Like, remove him from the equation.
Have you met Tito Ortiz?
Commentating, bro. MMA. He's a great basketball commentator, but he should never commentate combat sports.
No way.
I think Tito Ortiz should commentate everything. I think he should have his own talk show.
Mainly
porn. What are you talking about?
I would watch a porn.
And he should do it, and it should be on Telemundo. So he has to speak Spanish.
Oh, God.
Think about that.
Fuck me in the beard. Fuck me in the beard. No way, man.
Tito Ortiz talk show on Telemundo. Amazing.
No fucking way, dude. I won't watch it. No way.
Telemundo are awesome on mute.
I'd rather watch MMA with two people speaking Arabic for 3 hours than hear Tito Ortiz speaking English for one. Just saying.
Austin Burke, who can't?
I.
Wait, Austin Burke, what's going on, baby? But I don't think so. Justin's a bad motherfucker. I don't think you could put him in a guillotine. Just saying. Just for the record.
Hey, that's my boy, Austin Burke. Shout out. But listen, you're real quick, stay with me. You have to get through like 10 killers to even get to me. So like, there's no guillotine attempt, bro.
Yeah, it's not a good match right there. It's about getting there, right?
Justin's got like a whole squad of goons. I mean, you're gonna have to fight your way.
I'm like the most protected anemic
layers
man.
Layers of defense are hard to get through, my man.
And you got to fight through Gabe, which Gabe will kill anybody. So
straight up. Never get through level one, so I'm not worried like at all.
Justin Sims is like that last boss where you have to fight all these fucking mean characters.
Like, bad boss where you hit him once. You're like, I got to the big boss at the end. That was it. I won.
Shit. Holy shit! So our next guest.
It'd be the worst version of Mike Tyson's fun shot ever.
Next guest has not shown up yet, so.
Who we're waiting for?
Jason.
Jason Suarez.
Undefeated, baby.
Undefeated.
Undefeated. And he's the
last featherweight champ for Titan. And he was like
a bad man.
Okay.
Everybody.
Dangerous guy.
He might be the baddest man in Miami. There's a lot of bad people in Miami. And Jason Suarez is up there.
I was going to say, that's a bold statement, my friend.
I know. But listen, I know a lot of bad mofos.
Is he from Miami or?
He's from Miami, I think.
Miami?
Yeah, I think so. But he's dude. I know Jason Suarez, bro, up close. The dude is a monster. He's okay. Let me retract the statement. He is the most unknown monster.
When's he fighting? When's he fighting next?
He was supposed to. He was in the tournament for PFL for featherweight, the $1 million featherweight.
He paid
the Titan belt to go to PFL, but then COVID happened. PFL canceled the tournament. Last I checked, he was going to be making his pro boxing debut. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, He's like he's a real true mixed martial artist though. He's got a real mixed base. He's good. He's great everywhere.
We got a lot of fucking people that want to transfer over and actually go into boxing from MMA. I mean, is that where the money is? Like, you know, it's kind of a safe bet. I mean, Anderson Silva did it. Jen Pulver did it. How many other? Continue.
One of my pro MMA guys also does pro boxing. And the money at the lower tier is not bad. And boxing, unlike MMA, like for instance, if you're gonna fight someone trying to like build, they'll throw money at you to make sure that you take the fight. So you can be a journeyman in boxing and make, you know, 10 grand to fight six rounds. You know, I mean, and these are boxing rounds, so they're 3 minutes. Like boxing, but then again, boxing has been around for a lot longer. They have the Ali Act, which ensures that the money has to be dispersed all the way around. At the height, boxing. I mean, dude, there's a reason why Conor went and fought Mayweather, right? Now that Mayweather came to fight in the UFC,
right?
Because the money. I'll tell you this. I remember Cotto. Cotto was doing an HBO fight, not for pay-per-view, just a basic HBO fight. And I think he made $3.5 million for that alone.
Are you shitting me?
The same night Cotto fought, the UFC entire bankroll wasn't $3.5.
Why the fuck do we not have the Muhammad Ali Act in MMA?
There's something way wrong with that.
What do you mean there's way wrong with that?
No, I'm saying there's something wrong with those numbers. That what Cotto made that night is more than the whole UFC bankroll. That's a problem.
The Muhammad Ali Act ensures the fighters. Continue. I'm sorry.
I'll tell you this. I have been there where Dana has tipped a waiter 15 grand.
Woo! That's more than fighters make. What the fuck is going on with the planet Earth?
I'm gonna be a waiter.
The fuck? Like, Gabe, you agree with me that the Muhammad Ali Act is a very, very good idea for MMA, correct?
1,000%.
Thank you.
Without question.
Yes.
The thing is, your talent and your athletes that are putting it on the line are the ones that need to be taken care of. Like, when it's all said and done, the talent, it makes the show.
It'll happen. It'll happen, bro. The sport is still so young. It'll happen. It should have already happened. I agree.
That's the problem. Yep.
What's up, Debbie? I love you. Anywho, so if you're going to put Reebok, if you're going to parade fighters out that wear Reebok, and you're going to put Reebok logos on their back and everything like that, and you're going to make massive sums of money, you're going to protect that fighter if they break their back. That's my policy about MMA. Like, that's my policy about MMA fighters in general. And rankings have to make sense, too, you know?
Oh, the champ is here.
Hey, guys, I'm sorry. I was actually training, and I just went overtime.
What's going on,
brother?
I'm great. How about you guys? Thank you for having me on, guys.
Priorities.
Yeah.
So, undefeated fighter, NFC, the man himself, Jason. So, you're back in training, getting ready for your next fight, correct?
I mean, I don't have a fight booked, but I'm just staying in shape. Obviously, I don't know if everyone knows, but I'm signed with Titan. I was supposed to fight Lance back in May, but that didn't happen. And now I'm just waiting. I was promised that fight for my first fight back. So, I might just box while I'm waiting.
Jason, you said Lance. You meant Lance Palmer, right? You were supposed to fight Lance Palmer in the tournament for PFL.
Yeah, I was supposed to fight him as the first fight of the tournament, just to start the season. And we're headlining that card, and then obviously this pandemic happened, so that didn't go on. And I'm just staying in shape, and I was promised that fight for my first fight back because that's the fight I wanted. And so right now I'm just staying in shape, staying busy, and I might book a boxing fight just to do something while I wait.
And we just had this conversation about
Say again.
Oh. What did you guys say? The Lance Palmer fight is the next one on the table. Are you wrestling a lot? Because Lance is a good wrestler. That's what he always goes back to.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. You know, I mean, not to sound cocky, but I don't even think Lance is one of the like harder matchups for me out of the guys that are signed, you know, with PFL at 145. But yeah, I'm prepared for the wrestling. I love that. That's fine with me.
Awesome, man. So we had a conversation just before you got in here that, you know, especially in the current landscape with the pandemic going on, that there's going to be obviously more money in boxing than there is in MMA. Is that the reason why you're going to be transferring over into boxing, kind of dabbling in both sports, or are you seeing it from a career standpoint?
I would like to dabble in both sports, one. And then two, I'm signed to PFL, so it's not like I can go fight for Bellator or UFC, and I can't fight MMA. And, you know, it's a long time off. If it goes through, like PFL saying, we're not going to fight until, I don't know, like February, March, April, then that's a long time off, and I could stay busy and gain some more fight experience and just work on my boxing in the meantime and get a couple of fights of boxing. So both stay busy, and two, I could jump in there as well too.
Is that hard for you? I mean, when I met you over a year ago, you were on a tear. I mean, you were busy, busy, busy. You really cleared out the 145 division in Titan, in my opinion. I mean, how do you go from that busy to just nothing?
Yeah, no, I mean, it does suck. But, I mean, I am training. And, there's no, like, sugarcoating. You know, it sucks. And I would like to be fighting, especially, like, you know, I feel like I'm in the prime of my career. And I was staying busy and getting fights in on a roll. So I'll get back to it eventually, you know. Hopefully this stuff blows over and Titan puts on some fights. And in the meantime, I'll box and stay busy, you know, and just quench my thirst there and gain experience and get better. That's the name of the game, you know. My number one goal is just to be the best, not just to win fights.
So PFL will allow you to do other combat sports?
PFL did say I could box. We talked to Ray. He said I could box. As far as like doing, I don't know. I didn't really ask about the other stuff. I'm sure I could do a grappling tournament if I wanted to, but I don't want to do a grappling tournament. And they don't want me doing MMA, obviously.
Working with Ray Seppo is
that's good.
Working with Ray Seppo, he's an absolute fucking savage, and like, you know, obviously like he understands the fight game. And he understands the fighters as well. Like, how has it been? And I asked the previous fighter that was on the podcast, how is it like working with Ray Seppo?
I mean, honestly, he's doing nothing but cool with us. He mainly talks to my coach, Marcos Avalon. But, I mean, like, I haven't really done much with them because I haven't fought much. I mean, I haven't fought at all for them. So right now it's just been, like, very little contact, you know? I was supposed to, you know, make my debut for them back in May. And but I have nothing bad to say about Ray. And, you know, as far as I know, he's a really good guy, and I've heard nothing but good things.
Cool.
Are you still training down at FFA in Miami?
Yeah, forever.
Freestyle Fighting Academy. Great, yes, great, yeah. Great school. And you're like their star there, man. You're just – when I filmed you there, it was like I felt like I'm with, like, the guy that's, you know – Yeah, I can't wait to see you fight again, man.
I've been here for a lot of years now, like 12 years here, and it's been my only gym training, and I've always trained under the Avalon brothers, Marcus and Dave Avalon, and this is where I'll retire, you know. This is where I like training, and, you know, whether we have the guys or not, we always bring the guys in that I need, you know. Like, so when I was getting ready for Lance, we had already brought in some All-American wrestlers and stuff like that, but obviously the fight got canceled, so we sent them back home, but... Just the gym's awesome.
Yeah, it is a very, very sweet gym. I love that place. And your manager too is a great guy. You're just surrounded by great people, and I think that you probably would say it that that's a huge part of your success. And tying into that, your mother is a big part of your life. And I remember there's a famous Titan replay of you knocking out an opponent and your mother running into the cage. Can you tell us what that experience was?
Oh yeah, I've always been like a big mama's boy, you know. So that's always, I've always been a mama's boy. It's always been part of my life. And my mom's, I'm probably one of the few guys that has a mom in my corner, and she does a great job in my corner. And she obviously, you know, like if I need some motivation or something like that, she really usually keeps her mouth shut most of the time. But I think that was after, I think I fought Luis Gomez, and he had caught me, and like first punch of the fight actually has messed me up. I couldn't really see right. And so I did take a beating in some of that fight, and I knocked him out, I think. And she was just super happy about it and just ran in because it looked like, I think at one point I was going to lose the fight. Yeah, my mom's a big motivation for me. And then my mom and my coach, Marcus Avalon, those are the two people that keep me like right. And I owe like, you know, where I'm at to them.
And your dogs too. Tell the world about your dogs.
Oh yeah, designer breed bulls. I breed English and French bulldogs. I love dogs. That's like my favorite pastime hobby kind of thing. I love bulldogs. That's if I'm not training, and I'm not, you know, hanging out with my family or something like that in the Keys, I'm with my bulldogs.
They're beautiful too, man. I gotta tell you, I see them all. I like every picture I see. You have all different kinds, shapes, colors, sizes. They're beautiful, man.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I take pride in my bloods. I look at all the DNAs and everything and the bloodlines. I'm crazy with that. I'm crazy.
You can see it in the work, man. Really good stuff. So who was your hardest fight to date?
My hardest fight. My hardest fight was probably Luis Gomez. Yeah, I would say Luis for sure. Because he just, I don't know, man, honestly. I mean, honestly, like there's been fights where it hasn't gone like perfect for me, where I've been caught or something of that nature, but there's never been a fight like where I just couldn't do what I wanted to do, you know? So like I was still able to do what I wanted to do there. I just got caught. But there's never been a fight like where the guy's stuffing my takedowns or stopping my striking or doing that. Like it always, you know, sometimes I get caught because I'm being stupid or I get hit with a knee or something like that. But I don't know. Like I haven't had a fight where I had to change much of the game plan, but I would say Lewis probably, because it went four rounds and he did catch me two times, and I had to fight back, and it was good.
Great answer.
So, as an undefeated fighter, obviously, you know, you're getting better every single fight, which is what I appreciate the most about your career, is because every single fight, when you're undefeated, when you're on a tear, when you're you know, successful, you know, people will just look to maintain their skills. But you're actually improving every single fight. Is there an area that you can critique yourself? Because obviously, as a fan, we're not going to see it. Is there an area that you feel like you're going to be focusing on and honing in on and improving in that area?
Yeah, I mean, every I always try to improve, and Marcos is really good at getting me to improve and fixing these problem areas and stuff like that. And, you know, I can obviously improve everywhere. But, like, taking it back to, like I said, I want to box now. That's just to get better hands, you know? So, like, on top of, you know, jumping in the boxing world, it's also just to improve my hands and get better hands, because I can always have better, faster hands, more fluid, more comfortable standing, all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's fights, you know, every time we're that fight, you know, they'll show a chink of in my arm or something like that. For example, like that one fight where I got knee in the face, I was just dipping down too much, throwing my jab, and then he came under there. So, you know, I got to watch out for those knees. I got to get my head off center line a little better. I just got to do a lot of stuff, you know. I got to get better everywhere. And, that is my goal, you know. Like, you know, I want to win every second of the fight. And I'm not just saying this, but every fight, like, I don't think I've ever been like super happy after every fight. Like, my coach is always like, why aren't you happy? And like, well, I did this wrong, you know. And that stuff has to get fixed.
And that's an important facet of any fighter. And even Gabe will agree to this, is at that level, when you're winning all the time and being consistent, you're going to be your biggest critic, and you have to rely on yourself on being that biggest, on that, being on that critic and being that critic. So, you know, at this stage of the game, what is next for you? Like, what do you feel? Because you've already been a champion, you know, you're already undefeated. So what's the next step you feel?
I mean, the plan was going here, I was going to mow down the whole PFL 145ers and take that belt. And as long as PFL runs the tournament next year, that's the plan still. I want the PFL belt. And then I'll do that for a couple of years, and then I'll move on to another belt or something. But I just want to beat all these good guys and show them the best, you know.
Who do you see being?
You're undefeated, but I know from your record, you've lost an exhibition, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, you broke up.
I heard that. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yeah, sorry. You said you broke.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I looked at your record, and you're undefeated, but there's an exhibition loss. That was for the Ultimate Fighter, is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah, I lost.
How did you feel? Like, how did you – so So you're undefeated. Nothing's going on. But how did that affect you having that loss after being undefeated for as long as you were? How was your reaction to that?
I was obviously mad. I'm mad about it. It was like a 2-round fight. It was at 155. The whole thing was just like a weird scenario and stuff like that. So, I mean, to be honest with you, it didn't really feel like a loss, and it didn't really, like, obviously it was a loss, and it didn't really, like, affect me much at all. There's like a lot of things that came into play in that fight. It was not supposed to happen and all kinds of things. So it wasn't like much I could learn from it in the sense that, yeah, I did lose. And, but it wasn't like I had like 8-week camp. It wasn't like I had 6-week camp. It wasn't like I had noticed I wasn't fighting at my weight class. There's like a lot of things going on. So it wasn't like a traditional, like I prepared all this time and then I go in there and I lose, you know? So it was a weird scenario. If I could go back, I wish I could do it different and prepare a little better, but it was fine.
Of course. Yeah. No, I'm just curious because that undefeated is that's a big thing, man. Like you go in there, I mean, like, you know, every fight, like, there's almost the anticipation of losing. And I see a lot of guys that they win, they lose, and then something just happens.
Yeah.
That's and a perfect example would be like, this is female. So like a Ronda Rousey, like she loses, and it's just over. It's just done. I'm just curious how that affected you psychologically. And do you feel like if you were to deal with it in real life to where you went, like the 18, 20, 20 and one, how you would react to that?
Yeah. I mean, so one, I really feel like, so people say like either win or you learn. And I think that's like a bullshit cop out. I think it's just to make people that lose feel better because you can get better while you win, you know, like there's always things in our that do it. I really feel that. Yep. It's like people always say that. It's just to make the loser feel better. But you should be able to get better at every win. Every win you did stuff wrong and you have to fix that. And then as far as like that Ronda Rousey comparison, it didn't really affect me in a sense. Anytime I'm in a fight and I mess up or anything, it just makes me hungrier, you know? So it just made me hungrier, made me prepare better. It made me just stay ready more, you know? Like, for example, right now, I'm just staying ready. I was totally out of shape then, and there's a lot of things just happened, and I was just told to fight, like, on, 14 hours notice, so I did it, you know? But I just got to stay ready. And I really feel like some of those guys that fall off, like Ronda Rousey wasn't really like a true fighter. No, she didn't really like fighting, you know, she just liked winning, but she didn't like getting hit or anything like that.
Well, I use her as a good example that everyone's going to know. And like, it's interesting when you people that win, loss happens. The psychological, and I'm not saying that you're going to lose. I'm definitely not telling you that. I'm just curious, like, as a former fighter myself, I'm curious about the psychological part of it for yourself.
Yeah, I think it used to bother me more, like, especially like 8-0, 9-0, to go, I have to get 10-0, I have to win this. But at the same time, I put so much pressure on myself just to win, like, individually. Like, I have to win this next fight. Like, it didn't matter if I was 13-14-0 beforehand. Like, I just want to win this next fight. So I think I'm just so used to that pressure that because I just want to win the fight so bad. I don't care that I'm going to be 15-0. I just want to win tonight, you know? And that's sort of how I take it, like sort of look at the smaller picture because, yeah, if I look at the big picture, though, I lose, I'm going to be now 14-1 or something like that. But at the end of the day, I really just want to win that night. You know, I don't care about what happened in training, all that stuff. You can't let any of that stuff get to you. You know, it's all about going out there and performing then. And I mean, that's why Conor McGregor is so good. You know, he just goes out there and performs.
And through, you're just a fucking competitor, and you can just tell that just by talking to you. So, like, you know, past Lance Palmer, who is an opponent that you feel is going to be the biggest challenge in your career? Somebody that you want to fight, like that plateau you want to reach? Who is that dream opponent?
Oh man, I don't really have a dream opponent. There's this one fight, maybe the last one, the one before. I know Usman was saying that, like, I lie that I don't ever look at my opponents or anything. There's like when I interview a thing, I never look at my opponents. My coaches, Marcus and Dave, look at my opponents. They send me an email on bullets and I just look at the bullets and then I fight them. And that's true. Like I never look at my opponents. So I am fighting Lance, or supposedly supposed to fight him next. And I'm happy about that because he's a wrestler. I think it's going to be fun, you know, stuffing his takedowns, punching him in the face and all that fun stuff. But, but I don't really care. You know, I just whoever's in the way to get the belt, whoever organization I'm at, I want the belt. That's all I want. I just want to beat these. I want to go through these guys and get the belt. And I figure if I'm getting the belt and I'm holding that belt, I'm fighting top guys. But I don't care, man. I could be a wrestler, jiu-jitsu guy. I don't know. Back in the day, like, I always wanted to fight Jose Aldo. Obviously, he's, you know, sort of washed up now. And there's disrespect to him and me still fighting the top level. But that would have been a guy that I've always wanted to fight. But other than that, there's no other guy that, like, I'm like, oh, I want to fight. Honestly, if I had to pick a guy, it would be Lance. I love the matchup with Lance. He's this tough, strong wrestler guy that just lays on everyone. And I'm looking forward to stuffing that those takedowns and jiu-jitsuing him and punching him.
Awesome. So one more question across the board. You brought up Jose Aldo, and a lot of fighters don't think about the next step after their fight career. And obviously you're going to accomplish big fucking things. I mean, you're already on a tear. What's your career plans after the fight game? Do you want to, like, coach? Do you know when to give it up, when to actually hang up the gloves and go on? Like, do you want to open up a gym? Do you want to, like, be involved in sport in a different way? What's the next step?
So I love coaching, right? I coach now still. Like, I coach 3-4 times a week. I love it. It just makes me better everything. Like, I really love coaching regular, like, guys and students, everything like that. So I'm definitely going to stay coaching. I'm definitely going to stay breeding bulldogs. I'm going to do that until I die. And then my coach, Marcus Avalon, is a really good businessman. I have some online stuff going on already. So he's taught me all this stuff. So I'm doing pretty well like that. But I love business and I love all that stuff. So, yeah, I'm not going to be one of those guys that fights forever. And I don't plan on fighting forever. I just want to, you know, get, like, I don't know, man. I like to say, like a good number, a 25 or a 30, you know, and be done. You know, that's what you're looking for. And then ride out, sort of like Khabib's doing. You know, he's the man.
Right on.
Thank you so much for coming on, champ. How can a new fan?
I really appreciate it. I'm so sorry for being late.
No, you're good. How can a new fan follow you? What, your Instagram?
Specimen Suarez. On Instagram, same thing on Twitter, and then Jason Suarez on Facebook. You come check me out, Miami Freestyle Fighting Academy, open 24/7. And yeah, check me out on YouTube, all these things, you know. I'd love to have you guys follow me and put input and comments on my pictures and my videos.
Cool. Freestyle Fighting Academy, the only gym where you can learn how to kick ass and get great ribs.
yes. Marcus is always doing the smoked ribs and stuff like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, fuck yeah, man. Hey, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Look forward to talking to you. Really appreciate it.
No problem, brother. Have a good one.
You too, guys.
Awesome sauce.
Take care. Very
cool. Dude, he's a badass. That guy is a bad mother. Woo! Jillian!
Hey, what's up?
What's going on?
Not much. Just getting out of training now.
Very good. So in training, game ready for your next fight?
Oh, yeah. I have a grappling competition August 30th with Submission Underground, so I'm getting ready for that first. And then August 17th against Paul Eliana Botella, so I'm hyped about that.
No shit. So you're actually preparing for a UFC fight, and you're also doing a grappling tourney. Like, you're training for both? Like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah. No matter what, I'm trying to stay as active as possible, just get as much competition experience as possible. So just being able to perform, it's a different world in there. So I'm trying to get in there as often as I can.
Right on.
Julian, when you said you just got done training, is the subtext to that I just beat up Shorty Torres?
100%.
That's awesome.
That's what most of the training consists of, is just beating up Shorty Torres.
That's super dope. Under the watchful eye of Dean Thomas. I love it.
100%. Shorty's living with Dean right now. So we're close. We work together every single day. And we got our little group right there that we're going to take to the top.
I love it. Yeah, Shorty was just telling me last week, man, Jillian is my main training partner. And she's all I need. Like, she's a bad mamma jamma, that girl.
Oh, yeah, we work every single day, and I'm so thankful to have him. He's just he's a lot like me, where we're just down to work hard every single day, and I feel like that's why Dean works with us, is because we'll just do whatever he tells us to.
Right on.
Great stuff. I would love to be a fly on the wall watching those sparring sessions.
That's all we did today, actually, was showed up, and me and Shorty did 3 rounds, and then Dean jumped in with us and started beating us up a little bit. So we had a rough day this morning, but Dean got his in.
You guys give it back to him, though. I've seen all of you guys beat him up. He's the old man in the crew. He takes a beating from you guys.
We try our hardest, but it's hard to get past even his jab sometimes. Like, I was telling Shorty, I'm like, I'm trying my hardest with him, but it's just, he's still fast. Even though he's the old man in the crew, he's fast as anything right now, still.
He's the man, for sure.
So getting involved in, obviously, you're a competitor in the women's MMA and a great competitor at that. And, like, I remember tape trading. And the first time I got involved with females MMA was, you know, I got a bunch of tapes, like this big bin of tapes. I actually watched Smack Girl in Japan. And I'm like, oh, my God, it blew my mind. Like, you know, female MMA is just as good as male MMA. And it took a while for, you know, American audiences to get with the program, but naturally we did. How did you get involved with mixed martial arts?
I honestly have no idea. I started training cardio kickboxing when I was 16. Just like, it was just like a spur of the moment thing. When I was 16, I asked my dad if he could find me a cardio kickboxing gym. And it happened being Dean Thomas's gym in Port St. Lucie, Florida. So that's where I started when I was 16. And a couple months later, I started doing MMA classes and I just kind of fell in love with it.
Awesome.
You walked into the right gym. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, 100%. He's still my coach to this day, so I think that shows. And he literally brought me – I never played a sport in my life before I started training. So it was like he literally brought me from the least athletic person in the world to the UFC. So I think that says a lot for Dean Thomas.
Yeah, he's really, in my mind, and I know this is fact, he's one of the good guys in this industry. I mean, he's done a lot for me as a person that I don't even think he knows. But he's such a genuine person. I used to tell people that Dean was my Jiminy Cricket for the fight game. He was the conscience that I could call and say, hey, man, is this real? Is this guy full of shit? He's just a super, super dope guy.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I feel like in the mixed martial arts game, he's really innovating it. He's really trying to take it to the next level. And so many coaches are just doing what their coach taught them. So they're not necessarily evolving the game, where I feel like Dean's creating his own style and he's going to change the game.
Full commitment with that guy, no matter what he does. I love him. It shows.
I always tell him, like, no matter where you go, I'm going to be hanging on your ankle. You're stuck with me.
So, Gabe, did you ever meet Dean Thomas? Like, Gabe, obviously, in your travels to throughout mixed martial arts, did you ever meet Dean Thomas or?
Actually, you know what? I don't think I've ever met Dean. I know we have a lot of mutual friends. Never had an opportunity to meet with him no. I mean, you know, he's been around for the longest. I remember when he was fighting in Shuto and some of the Florida organizations back in the day. I mean, he's as veteran as you get, you know. I mean, much respect to him and everything that he's done. You're in good hands, I'll tell you that.
So yeah. what was the MMA fighter that you actually looked at besides Dean? And you said, well, you know what, this is a sport I can actually accomplish. Like, was it Ronda Rousey when she made the MMA boom happen in women's MMA, or was it another fighter that you actually looked at?
I guess it wasn't necessarily any fighter that I was really looking at the very beginning. Ronda Rousey still hadn't made her UFC debut at that time, so women weren't even in the UFC whenever I was first starting. Right. So I guess, I don't know, it was more of just the love of the sport that I fell in love. Like, I started training and I just loved it more than anything. I love going to the gym like 3-4 times a week, and then it just increased. Now I train twice a day, every day. But yeah, I just fell in love with the sport and especially with jiu-jitsu, I was just good at it. It came naturally to me, I felt like. So I was 115 pounds back then and like 16, 17 years old, and I was able to manhandle like 200-pound guys. So I was like, all right, this is pretty cool.
Fuck it off.
Speaking of manhandling guys, what is dating like for you? Like, I mean, in comparison, I'm a soft male. So, like, I've really been dominant, stronger females. So – for you, what's dating like as a UFC female fighter?
I feel like every guy's trying to impress you with, like, trying to be like, oh, yeah, I've been in some street fights and stuff. I'm like, oh, well, I dedicated 10 years of my life to this crap. Like, it's a little different.
Boom!
And then they find out that you can actually make 90% of males cry. And then they, like, you know, they're like, Now they're gentlemen.
I feel like guys who don't train don't actually understand how, like, it doesn't matter how big you are. If you don't know technique, then I can do what I want with you. Like, I can manhandle pretty much any guy if he doesn't know technique. Once he starts learning a little bit of technique, then obviously size does make a difference. But, like, if they don't know anything, then it's like, it's like there's really nothing you can do. And I feel like a lot of guys play around like, oh, you're going to beat me up? And it's like, well, yeah, I could.
I tell people that all the time, all these like tough guys that I know in my normal life. I'm like, I know 115-pound girls that would kill you.
That used to be my favorite part whenever I'd be finished training and it'd be guys that it'd be like their first day a couple weeks in or something. And they'd just look at me like, there's nothing I could do. Like, I used all my strength and there was just nothing I could do. I'm like, yeah, that's how it is.
It's called technique, buddy.
Okay, so, and I feel like it helps you develop a better technique as a female because you're so used to working with these big guys, these strong guys. I can't muscle out anything. So it's like, I got to learn to be technical or nothing's going to work for me.
Super skilled grappler. And obviously Gabe's a black belt and you're a mean mofo, especially on the ground. Heading to your next flight, what's the game plan like? How has training been? How's preparations been? Especially under the confines of a pandemic going on, like how's preparations been?
Oh, well, I don't take time off. I'm training no matter what every single day. And especially we kind of have a unique situation right now with me, Dean, and Shorty, where Dean has his house, like his garage matted out. So we're just literally training there every single day. It's just the three of us. We're getting a one-on-one time every single day with Dean Thomas. So it's he's just perfecting us as fighters within these last few months, and we're staying ready, just staying prepared. And I finally got the call last week, so I was happy to get it. I was waiting for it sooner, but I'm happy that I actually have a date and I have a contract signed now.
Awesome. And what is the date of that fight actually?
Just for October people watching. 17th.
Cool. Awesome. And you're gonna be traveling to Abu Dhabi, or what's the traveling like?
I don't have a location on that currently. I'm assuming Las Vegas, but right now in the contract, it just says to be decided. So
and when is the Submission Underground event?
That would be August 30th. That is a Chael Sonnen's event, and it's on UFC Fight Pass.
Yeah. Who's your opponent for that? For the
that'll be in Oregon, correct?
I'll be grappling against Amanda Lowen then. I believe she's 4-0 with Sub Underground so far. So she's kind of like their hometown hero. So I'm hoping to end her streak.
You got all of Florida behind you, for sure.
I appreciate all the support, always.
I would assume that this unique situation with you and Dean and Shorty is giving you a lot of good one-on-one time to really hone in certain skills. Is there a couple particular things you're really honing in on?
I guess everything in general. I'm just working on becoming a mixed martial artist, like all around, where I feel like I guess I was just so good at jiu-jitsu that I became so much of a jiu-jitsu fighter. It's predominantly jiu-jitsu, always just too comfortable on the ground almost. So I'm trying to become an MMA fighter. I want to do damage everywhere. So I want to be able to do damage on the feet, do damage on the ground, and then make them not want to be in there. So it's easy to get the sub. They'll give up their throw because they just don't want to be in the cage with me.
It shows in your style. I don't think other people want to go to the ground with you. That's well-known information in the women's division.
Oh yeah, no matter what, I'm always throat hunting. So it's like, all the girls know I'm going for it, and I still get it every single time. So they have right to be scared.
So who's the opponent that you want to fight? Like, especially getting past your next opponent and talking about the UFC and obviously your division stacked. Who's the opponent that you're really gunning for after you finish this girl?
I try not to look past my next fight that I have lined up right now. Obviously, Pollyanna is the person that I really need to focus on at the moment. But after this, I just want someone with a number next to their name. I feel like I deserve it. I'm ranked number 15 at this point, and I just want to keep on climbing up, getting higher in the rankings. So I want somebody with a number next to their name. I know there's a couple fights coming up, like Montana De La Rosa, Marina Meraz, Alexa Grasso, and Jian Kim, I believe, and Antonina Shevchenko. I believe she's available too. So all of those, either the winners of those fights or Shevchenko, any of them sound good to me. I just want someone with a number.
Right. So give me anybody in the top fucking 10. Let's go and let's submit them, right?
100%. I'm just trying to climb the ranks. I'm trying to get to Valentina. So I'm willing to work my way up there.
What a badass. So
right, right decision.
Is there, you know, how do I put this? Justin, fill me in. What do you got?
I was just going to ask her what her thoughts are on Dean Thomas as an actor. I mean, we know how you feel about him as a head coach.
Surprisingly, I feel like Dean keeps his lives pretty separate. He's a master of a couple of trades, but I feel like he keeps his lives pretty separate. So I haven't seen a lot of his acting, actually.
You should investigate that.
I didn't know he was an actor.
He's separating them. We should combine those two worlds. That's what I'm saying. I say we produce a movie. We'll have you and Dean and Shorty star in it. The whole point of acting is to not act. And
we always joke around about that. We were like, we need a camera. Because Dean pretty much has a fight house right now. He has a house and Shorty's living at it. And the garage is matted out. And he's been flying in people for us to train with. And we've just been working hard there every single day. But obviously there's a lot of play that comes with that work. So we've been joking around. We're like, we need a camera to follow us around. This is reality TV right here.
I'll be your camera. Because with Dean Thomas and Shorty Torres, that's a sitcom already. You throw you in the mix, and we could go to the top.
Oh, it's just gold right there.
We can't buy that chemistry.
Exactly.
The next Full House. It could absolutely happen. I agree.
And Shorty will be both Olsen twins. We're going to increase on both of them. So people will start questioning if there's really two Shorty Torreses.
Oh, that's great.
So obviously Dean Thomas moved his gym into his garage. Are there any concerns from your end, you know, especially with everything going on, like with the current pandemic, where you're going to fight next, you know, testing, do I open up the gym? Do I go to a gym? Blah, blah, blah. Like, is there concerns going through your head about like possibly like getting sick or, you know, does that roll into your head, especially through preparations?
Well, actually, Dean and I both, about a month, I was supposed to compete at Submission Underground about a month ago, and Dean was on his way flying to Fight Island, and both of us had tested positive for coronavirus.
No. So
he wasn't able to fly to Fight Island, and I had to pull out of the Sub-Underground match. So, unfortunately, we've both been through that experience already, and I guess we've just been a little bit more careful since then, trying to be isolating a little bit more and not working with as many people.
Now, with somebody so athletic and such great shape, like, how did it feel? Like, how did you recover? What was the road to recovery?
I experienced almost pretty much every symptom, but just minorly. So I wasn't necessarily like really feeling it, but I still didn't feel like I could train, which is just that kills me enough. For 2 weeks, I was stuck in bed where I just felt like just extremely lethargic and a little bit of a cough, a little bit of an itchy throat, but nothing too bad. It was just the biggest problem for me at that time was I just couldn't train.
Right on. Gabe, are you saying? I'm sorry, sir.
I am curious. Women's MMA has a tendency to they have a tendency to make things more sexually oriented. I know that they try to review Ronda as this as something that she's really not. Do you feel that the UFC pushes you more towards being a girly girl that fights, or is that not a concern at all?
I don't feel like the UFC necessarily pushes it, but they definitely do treat girls different that do push that kind of agenda. Like, there's girls who necessarily aren't at my level of fighting that get main card spots, that get a lot more attention than they necessarily deserve in this sport just because of them pushing more of a sexual agenda.
Wow.
So you feel that it would behoove the athlete to utilize that part as marketing for themselves. Not so much that the UFC is pushing that, but that would be something that would benefit the athlete itself. Is that fair?
Yeah, I definitely see that, but it's only going to get you so far, too. You can only push yourself in that manner so far. A lot of those girls who are pushing themselves in that manner, they're not necessarily going to make it as fighters. They're not going to be elite fighters. They're just going to make it to a certain level, and I feel like modeling almost takes over at that point. So, yeah, it does. It'll help you get more followers and help you get more publicity at the beginning, but I don't necessarily see you become a world champion doing that.
And that's a good point. And that's a good point that you brought up.
Is there any particular fighter that you... comes to mind when you say that?
I guess you see, like, a lot of the prettier girls, like, obviously Paige VanZant just fought Rachel Ostovich. I believe she's 4-5 right now and has had several main card spots. I'm like, I've only been on the main card once ever, and I'm 5-2 in the UFC at the moment. So it's like, I feel like my skills deserve more, but her looks have gotten her farther at this point.
Wow. So... And that's, like, a brilliant point that you brought up, because I'm a big Ronda Rousey fan, and I always felt when she was an actor, it hindered her career, because her focal point was in modeling, acting, everything like that, and then it took attention away from being a world champion. Do you, like, if those avenues ever opened up for you, would you turn those down and concentrate on your craft, which is being this awesome fighter, or would you, explore those avenues?
I'm not in fighting to become famous, like to become just to get my name out there. I'm in fighting because I love this. Like, this is what I was born to do, and this is where my heart is. I just love being able to compete, and I love I want to test myself until I am the best martial artist in the world. So I just want to stay with this. I want to be the best in the world. I want to set records, and the people I look up to are the girls like Amanda Nunes, who's already defended both her belts, and I feel like that's the type of girl that I want to be like.
Awesome.
Jillian, with the Reebok deal ending with UFC, is that going to affect you at all financially?
I'm not actually sure the terms of the Reebok deal at this moment. I know I saw that they're signing a new deal with Venom, so yeah, I'm not really sure how that's going to go.
I know a lot of fighters obviously lost a lot.
Do you like Venom?
I think Venom's dope, and I guess you say a lot of fighters lost a lot of money, but I haven't, ever since I've been with UFC, they had the Reebok deal, and it's like, before that, I was fighting with, like, pretty low-level promotions, like, just low-level pro promotions, so the Reebok deal has been the best treatment that I've ever gotten so far, but obviously a lot of fighters took a pay cut whenever it came in initially.
What about you, Gabe? Would that have affected you?
Sponsors
on your shorts? You couldn't have Condom Depot on your ass while you were fighting or something?
I'm sure I would probably be able to get more sponsors if they didn't have the Reebok deal, but... I don't know necessarily the stipulations around the Venom deal at the moment.
I think it's going to be good for everybody. Gabe, what were you saying?
If all you know, then it's great.
Ben's been around for a while.
She's coming from a spot of like, this is all she knows. So for her, it's great. When I fought Joe Lozano on Spike TV, I made almost $60,000 on sponsorship money alone.
Woo!
And right. So, see, if I would have done the Reebok deal, that would have been $2,500. So, I mean, point. I'm looking That's at it as like point. The Reebok deal is garbage.
Right, right. So,
yeah. Geez, they could tattoo Condom Depot on my forehead.
So we're going to wrap up, and obviously, you know, you have a busy night ahead of you, and just one more question from me. If you could fight anybody, any generation, any time whatsoever, any opponent either in jiu-jitsu or MMA, who would you fight?
Besides Shorty Torres.
Besides Shorty.
Shorty, I get to fight every day, so he's not on that list, but I guess I'd love to fight the person who's been a huge idol for me since the beginning, which is always Rose Namajunas. Ever since I've always looked up to her 100%, and we're different weight classes at the time, so the fight's probably never going to happen, actually. But that's like a dream match for me. I would love to train with her one day if that'd be possible.
Awesome. Justin?
I would just say, please send your love to Shorty and Dean for us. That you guys, this is my favorite fight camp of all the fight camps, is your fight camp. I love everybody involved, this small little skeletal crew of killers you got. I'm cheering for you. I need you to start training. My daughter turns 3 next year, so either you or Dean, jiu-jitsu training starts. Gabe is too far away for him to train my daughter, so it's got to be you or Dean if you're down. I'll pay you.
Yeah, we got you.
And Gabe, one more question?
Absolutely. This is an important one. What's your favorite fruit?
Fruit? Oh.
Fruit.
Probably mandarin oranges, I would say. The little cuties, like the little mandarin oranges. Those are probably the best.
The cuties? You're actually branding the cuties? Of the mandarin oranges, you're taking cuties?
Yeah, okay. They're so good. Right. They don't have they don't season them or anything.
This is why we have the champ. It's your favorite on the show. He will judge fighters' favorite fruits. If you don't like it, fight him.
Right now, I'm like, oh.
All right, Savage. It was a pleasure having you on. Where can we find you? Where can we find you out? Where can we find you on social media? Shout out anybody. Let us know where we can find you.
Of course, always shout out Dean Thomas and Jose Shorty Torres. They're my main coach, my main training partner. You can follow me at Savage_UFC on Twitter and Instagram. And go ahead and watch me get my hand raised August 30th on UFC Fight Pass on Submission Underground. And October 17th, not sure where that is, but against Poliana Botella. It'll be exciting.
All right, Savage, you're the best. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
And we'll be cheering for you. Promise.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure talking to you guys.
Have a good one.
Good skill.
Fucking radical. Holy shit. What do you guys think?
Gabe, I think she could take you, bro. No disrespect. Dude, no disrespect at all. But she's in her prime. You're not.
I mean, Gabe, you're that motherfucker.
You know what they say. Just because a war horse gets put to pasture does not make it not a war horse.
True. I mean, Gabe's a bad motherfucker. I mean, I don't know, but like, you know, also Savage, she's a pretty bad lady. I mean, I don't know, Gabe, you know.
You've got the best.
I have young pups that come in all the time, and they realize that the old dog has been there and done that.
Listen, brother, there's a long line of creepers online somewhere that would love a chance to get beat up by her.
Fucking creepers, man.
Think of one.
Yeah.
are there potential
gentlemen, I love you so much. I hope you guys have a blessed week. I'll see you. I'm not going to be here next week. I'm so sorry. Filming a fight. But tune in because we got a great guest. Chris Lifestyle Lytle is next week, right?
Who?
Yeah, Chris. Chris is good as a guest, man. Solid dude.
He's allergic to boring fights.
Good potential guest.
Allergic to boring fights. The dude was never in a boring fight.
Never.
Yeah, he even fought bare knuckle, even last year?
Bro, and you know why he did that? Because he's one of their like ambassadors and a commentator. Is because he wanted to know.
Yeah,
he wanted to know what it was like to do bare knuckle. Like, dude, the guy's a badass, dude, and he gives a great interview.
We've had him on here once, and I can't wait to get him back on. So,
can't wait. It'll be fun.
So everybody out there, share this, man. Like this. This is the newest show that's gonna blow up. Watch.
Yeah, big things in store.
So. We're going to wrap up the show. Gabe, any last parting words from former WEC champ, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, owns his own school, one bad motherfucker, UFC vet. Any last words, Mr. Gabe?
Just happy to be here. Hopefully next week will be even better. Happy to talk to Chris. Keep going what we're doing.
Awesome. Justin, what you got for us, baby?
I'll miss you guys next week, but tune in Thursday, every Thursday, 8:30 p.m. Fight Mixer right here on Facebook. Like, share, tell your friends, and everybody be safe. And don't get complacent.
Award-winning director, Justin Sims. Thank you very much, sir. Looking forward to your handiwork in Titan FC. He's also the camera guy. So tip the camera guy when you get there. So,
yeah, awesome. Tip. I never get tips. Tip the camera guy. I'm giving hashtag tip the cameraman.
I give him the tip.
Yeah, I'll give you a tip of this. No, just kidding. And also, Matt, the great producer himself, a Fight Mixer. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, holy shit, we're out of here. Three guests. We knocked them all out of the park. From Mr. Gabe, Justin Sims, and Matt signing off from the Fight Mixer. We'll see you next Thursday, baby. Peace. Perfect.
Hi, I'm Matt Seibel, producer of the Fight Mixer show. We have a good lineup of guests coming up next week. Take a look for yourself.
All right, what's happening, everybody? Chris Lights Out Lighter here. I just want to tell you guys on August 13th, I'm on the Fight Mixer. I'm going to be answering all kinds of different questions, covering lots of topics. If you guys have anything you want me to cover, please get a hold of the guys from the Fight Mixer and let us know, and we'll cover it. Thanks.
Hey, what's up? It's Clue McClain, Flyweight Fighter for Time.